Welcome to the European Hockey Federation podcast, in conversation with the biggest names in hockey, generating insight and engagement around coaching, officiating and playing. Powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFIH Academy. Presented by Jack Rolf, the founder of a coaching lab. For this episode, we spoke with two hockey stars, Kate Richardson Walsh and Darren Chessman. They shared their experience of coaching influences and influencers and the impact of previous coaches and environment of their philosophy and approach. Over to Jack.
Coaches, good morning. Good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. Great as ever to have you on board. Some of you would have been with us before, and for those that haven't, welcome for the first time. I'm Jack Rolf, founder of the Coaching Lab and presenter for the series. And as ever, the webinars will be up on Coach Logic platform, and encourage you to go and check it out straight after and share your reflections with us. Again, privileged to have two absolute champions, two people who have represented their country, two people who have worked and played in the hockey capitals of the world, and now both living the dream and giving back to the sport they love to support the future generation. So, Kate Richardson Walsh, welcome, and Darren Cheeseman, welcome.
Hi, Joe.
So obviously, Kate in London, and Darren just outside Amsterdam. So, hockey world being connected with me in Australia as well again. So, the power of sport. Guys, maybe just give us a quick overview of maybe where you're at now. And I think we're going to dive into the coaching stuff that we've done previously, but quick rundown of what we're up to, where we've been, and how you're here.
Awesome. You okay?
Thanks, Darren. So I'm Kate Richardson Walsh. I played internationally for 17 years and retired after Rio, but I've coached really throughout my hockey career. So I played three times in the Netherlands, and it's kind of just what you do when you play in the Netherlands. You also give back to the club. So I always coached junior teams. When I was playing at KZ, Stichtse and Bloemendaal. And then also coached at Reading. So I was assistant coach for four seasons with Reading when I played there. And then now, retired from hockey and coaching at Hampstead and Westminster, and absolutely loving it. I'm co-coaching with Sarah Kelleher, the ladies' first team, and we're really interested in Hampstead's values, what it stands for as a club. That's what attracted us to it, and the players group as well, and their ambition and what they want to be about. And there's just a really nice alignment there, and it's a really good challenge in lots of different ways, and I'm really enjoying. We've gone from conference to Premier League, and we finished fourth or third. And yeah, we're excited for what might come. I think this season's going to be a challenge for everybody, but I'm excited to put all of what I've learned and continue to learn, because I'm never going to stop, into practice, into coaching, and exactly as you said, Jack, to give back.
Cheers, Kate. Great to have you with us. Cheeseman.
I think similar to Kate, so I went over to Holland the first time when I was 19 and played for Oranje Zwart. Shows how old I am, because they're now Oranje Rood. That club doesn't even exist anymore. So when I was playing first team there, just like Kate said, you're responsible for coaching the under-12s and the under-14s. And it was great, because that had a huge impact on my coaching philosophy. And I know we'll talk about that later, but I wasn't allowed to teach them any tactics. I was only allowed to teach them technical skills and grow them and get them to manipulate the ball and do all kinds of crazy stuff, because they would learn tactics later. And that kind of blew my mind, because it was the complete opposite of what we were doing back home. I also went out and played for KZ a few years ago. So it's the home of many people, many hockeyers around the world. And again, coaching there. And when I was out in Holland, the Belgian Federation heard that I was out in Holland and said, okay, well, if you're going to be in Holland, why don't you come over and help coach our under 23 girls? So then I was commuting between the two, And then really enjoyed it. And they gave me an offer and said, if you're in Belgium more, we'll give you more work. So I took a role in Belgium to go and coach a Premier League club there with the women. And then got involved more with the federation. So on top of coaching a junior national team, I was also there as a technical consultant. So mainly me and Manu Brunet from the Argentinian national team, who was also over in Belgium. I'd be looking at the girl side and he'll be looking at the boy side, looking at how we can get the players technically good enough so that they could start winning medals at the targeted Olympics. Yeah, it was really cool. So running programs, designing what that training environment would look like, working with the other coaches. And yeah, so doing that. And now I just left Waterloo Ducks and I'm now over in Holland, again in the Hoofdklasse, this time working with Laren. And yeah, just started our first session yesterday. I had a few sessions with them before the summer. But yeah, it's all getting serious again now yesterday and looking forward to the season starting.
Amazing. Darren, thanks and great to have you with us. I think it's picking up and you can both fully recognise some very common trends. Both played at the top level. Both have gone away and outside of England to coach and to play. But diving in on those first experiences, Kate, what was that like? You've obviously gone to go and play and they've said, can you do some coaching? What was that? Do you remember that first experience, the first season that you delivered?
Yeah, so that would have been at Kazed, and I helped. So I went out with Brett Garrard at the time, and so we both coached the Meisje Zijn, so the under 18 girls. And I was 24, so there was a bit of an age gap, but not that much. And I found it really interesting. Also, just being in it's not completely different culture, but it is in terms of a hockey sense. And just their confidence around the game and what they know and, you know, the opinions that they've formed. And I found all of that really interesting. And I learned a lot from the players that I've coached. Interestingly, Annabeth Weitenberg is who was playing then as under 18, then was playing at Hampstead and is now married to Richard Smith, who also played England and GB. So it all came full circle for me last year. But yeah, I learned just so much, as Darren said, how they're taught the game, what they understand about the game, their skill acquisition, their technical ability is kind of started when they're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then, so then by the time we had them under 18 level, it was around, you know, how do we play the game? And absolutely feeding into what the ladies first team are doing, second, third, fourth team. And they're already kind of know by that age who is likely to take that step into which team. That's also kind of sorted out as well. And so that development, you understand how players are developed, where they're developing to. They are part of that journey as well. It's not, you know, it's not a kind of conversation that's off the table. That's the also thing that I liked. It was talked about amongst the players, amongst all the coaches. It was really open in that sense. And there was a lot of support then around that. You know, this player is going to play for the fourth team. Brilliant. Let's support her being the best fourth team player she can be. This player is probably going to play for Dharma Zane. She's going to be, and maybe going on to maybe trying to get into international teams, you know, and that was the same amount of support around her. And that's what I really liked about that, the psychology, I suppose, which I think needs to surround every player.
Darren, you've obviously went over as a 19-year-old and went to play and ended up doing some coaching. What was that, number one, what was that like? But as an Englishman being abroad, did you feel like you had to be English or you had to try and be Dutch? How did you approach that?
So I'd already done some coaching before that. So when I was, I think, 12, 13, I was with Arsenal Football Club Community Department and as a hockey player. And they got me coaching in their soccer schools because they wanted me to stay off the streets and stay away from trouble during school holidays when training had stopped and when school was keeping me busy. So they gave me like this little coaching role in the soccer school. They paid me through sandwiches at lunch and stuff like that. That was my first real taste of coaching. And then supporting the hockey sessions through the Arsenal program, and then working with Nicky Thompson on his hockey camps during the school holidays as well. So by the time I got out to Holland, I was fairly comfortable in being able to deliver training. As a coach, probably not, but in terms of being a trainer, I was fairly comfortable. But as you say, you get there and then suddenly the whole paradigm shifts and you start having to think about the way that they want to learn the game. So naturally I was thinking, okay, how do we start winning this game? And they were just saying, how do we get this player to be incredible at like smashing the ball off an upright backhand that's bouncing? And I'm like, yeah, but that's not important right now. that was incredible because I guess deep down, that's all the stuff that I was really interested in anyway as a player. When I look at my journey, I was always that one that just wanted to play with the ball and just be creative. But my kind of environment made me become a little bit more restricted. And it was just really liberating being able to go out and just focus on the things that made the players smile and made the players feel like they were getting better. So it's really cool.
Okay, I think you'll be able to help on this one as well. For those that are listening, the difference between trainer and coach is obviously a very European terminology. Just give us a bit of background of what the difference is and what that looked like.
Yes, and I quite like this as well. So it was a kind of, I suppose, a bit more like football, Darren, would you say?
Yeah,
the trainer's kind of the coach, the one who's giving the sessions, giving the training, doing the sessions, organising with the coach all the kind of the practices, what they're wanting to work on. And then the coach is more of a overseeing, kind of more of a managerial role, just, you know, making sure that everybody's moving in the right direction and, you know, has that kind of overall view towards the game at the weekend and, you know, definitely more about the tactics and the selection of players and stuff like that. And I think is a really nice blend to be had there, because you can get some really, really different characters, which is exactly what you want in a management team, and bringing totally different things out of players. And all of the trainers I've had in the Netherlands, just thinking back, Alison Annan was one of my, was a trainer. She was my head coach at Kazebelen. She was a trainer at Stichter. And, you know, that with Dave Smolenaars was a brilliant combination because really different characters, different experiences, but both able to bring it to the players in their ways that built into their strengths. And that's the way I'd see it anyway.
Darren, anything to add?
Yeah, as Kate said, the trainer is the guy that's and again, a trainer can also be a coach. If you're a trainer, it's very much around the training sessions and how you construct and design your training sessions to make sure that you're getting whatever goal you're looking for. And as Kate said, the coach is very much the person at the weekend that's responsible for the delivery of match day. And that coach might also be heavily involved in what's happening on the training field. But for example, this year at Laren, we have a head coach who doesn't really want to be on the training field, but also isn't really that interested in the tactics on a weekend. So he's there as head coach who is overseeing everything in terms of managing people. And again, that's something new for me and something that's really, something that's really interesting, actually.
I suppose there's different skill sets that go with obviously with each role and obviously play to the strengths, whether management is your skill set, you go towards that coach role, which I think again is really valuable. You've both been able to name drop some cool coaches and some pretty world-class coaches, and you're now even progressing even further with your coaching. But in those early days, did you look back and reflect and think, I would take something from this coach and I wouldn't take something from this coach, to create your own philosophy through your playing days? And is there anything in particular you would take?
Yes, I think there's learning everywhere. I think that's the first thing I try to think of, you know, even if it's you've not necessarily had what you'd consider a good experience overall, potentially with that coach, there's lots still to learn there for me as a coach. What didn't I like about that relationship? What you know, why didn't I flourish? Or, you know, was that me? Was that the coach? Was that relationship? Was the connection that wasn't there? And the other thing I think the thing to learn is that when I look back, I have had some brilliant coaches, but no one coach do I look at and say, yeah, they were it. They had absolutely everything, because it's impossible. For one person to be perfect is impossible. You can't be all things to all people all the time, although my ego would really love to be that very often. You just can't. And that's, again, why that management team, if you're able to have one, is so key and crucial. But absolutely, I look back and I think, wow, I mean, Alison Annan, you know, has had the experience. Technically, she's outstanding. As a player, she changed women's hockey. She changed the game. And so she's able to bring that knowledge, that experience, and that technical expertise and understanding of the game to players. And she's obviously doing it incredibly well now with the Netherlands women's team. You know, Danny Carey is a brilliant tactician. Is a complete student of the game, just loves the game, and again has such a passion for that he's able to transfer that to players in a real meaningful way, in a way that empowers them to also want to understand the intricacies of a game and how tactics can play a part in that. And I've had, yeah, just lots of different coaches. Tricia Heberle was a really interesting coach who just really cared and understood the importance of that connection, that the relationship that you build with the players, I think is really important. And she was more of a kind of coach, and Ian Jennings was the kind of trainer, I suppose, when those two are working as a pair. And really different characters, really different people, really different strengths. But that kind of almost little bit of friction was great for the team. We got the best out of both of them. So there's loads of little bits all you know, kind of dotted through that I'm kind of, I've been thinking about and learning from to help me.
Yeah. Darren?
Yeah, I guess the first experience I really had was with the Arsenal program. And that's pretty much been my coaching philosophy that's stayed consistent all the way through. Because I've learned the most from it. And you've got one guy, Freddie Hudson, who was really knowledgeable about the game. So he played for Southgate when they were European champions and played England 21s. And then he started working at Arsenal full time and just got heavily involved in his job. So pulled out of hockey a little bit more. But he had a team of people working under him. And one of them is like a Polish guy called Mark Antoniewicz. We called him AZ because his name begins with an A, ends with a Z, and there's almost every letter in between. And he was the first person to put a stick in my hand. And he made those sessions so fun and so engaging that I wanted to go back every single week. And he made me want to ask him the question, how can I play more hockey? And for me, that was crazy powerful. And when I look back at AZ, and I still speak to him now, AZ is terrible in terms of technical, in terms of tactical, in terms of principle. When you look at him as a hockey coach, he really doesn't have all of the typical skills that you'd expect somebody to have. But the way he teaches and the way he engages, the way he designs his sessions just draws you in, and it really makes you fall in love with the game. And then you go from him to Freddie, who basically became like my dad, and the level of support that they were able to give, the way that he kind of takes that loving of that excitement for the game into a loving of the game. He builds all of these challenges for you and really stimulates you and gives you the empowerment that you need in certain times. And that empowerment looks different for different people, gives you support and opportunity. Yeah, it was, for me, that was incredible. So like I did a recap recently where I looked at that program and I said, okay, why is it so good? And the number one thing is the brand. Like, they have an incredible brand. And when you look at some of the clubs and some of the systems that we have, we also could have the same thing. So Arsenal's brand makes you want to get involved. But an England hockey badge on your chest also makes people want to engage with you. A Dutch badge on your chest or a KZ badge on your chest, people want to listen to what you've got to say. Now, that's only good if you then have good people that are there delivering those sessions. And those people need to be able to, like I said, engage with the people that are there, understand where they're coming from, be able to relate to them, understand the challenges that might be facing them, not just on the hockey field, but everywhere in their life, so that you can really understand why people are acting like the way that they're acting. And I think the one thing I've learned from that is people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And that's always stuck with me. But that's really about the people that they had in that program. That means that you're then able to get good peers in your program. So the people you're training with, the people you're competing with, they become like your brothers and sisters, and you feel like you can rely on them. You feel like you actually are connected to them. And that gives you a feeling of belonging, which was really cool. Then the next part is the opportunity and empowerment that I spoke about earlier. So for me, I was trying to become a junior international and a senior international hockey player. So the opportunity came in, okay, we're going to give you 4 extra training sessions before school because you didn't make England under 16s and you really want to do it. So here's some extra training sessions so that you can get to where you want to get to. Here's some support so you can get to an England training camp because you don't have the money. But for somebody else, that opportunity was in a completely different arena because, like Kate was talking about earlier, some people are going to become fourth 11 players. Well, great. Well, let's give them the support that they need. Some people might just be having trouble away from hockey and they need some support in life. And that's where the support went to. So support was always there. It just looked very different for different people. And then the last part, the fifth one, is longevity. They started with me when I was 11. And the last conversation I had with somebody from Arsenal was, of course, on Saturday. But before that, it was a few days before that. So they've been with me for, too many years, 24 years or whatever it's been. And that longevity means that they can truly have an impact on your life. And they haven't been my coaches all the way through, but because of the rapport you build with them and because of the way you interact with them, you want to keep that relationship. And when I look at some of the other people I've had, Nicky Thompson, who was also really cool for me, he gave me big opportunities to go and play at Old Louts. He gave me big opportunities to go and coach with him, gave me confidence, really challenged me. Eric Fabon at Oranje Rood, Oranjezwart, changed my whole way of thinking. I thought defending was when you channel people out to the outside, and then I get to first training session and he tells me, until you start channeling people to the inside, you'll never play in my team. And I'm like, but it's too dangerous in there. Why would you send somebody to the inside? And so all of these people make these big impacts on your life, but every single one of them, I feel like they cared about me as a person and as a player and about my development. And there are some other coaches and who I don't feel like they cared about me. I don't feel like they cared about my development. And other people might see them as incredible coaches. Other people might say, this is one of the best coaches I've ever had. But for me, I didn't feel like they cared about me. And that meant that I didn't actually take anything from them. And I think that's just something interesting.
I think what you both are speaking about. Go on, Kate.
No, I could not agree more with what Dan said. And it reminds me of the Maya Angelou quote, is you'll not remember what people said, but you'll remember how they made you feel. And I think that connection, that relationship is one of the most important things. And it comes from a place of good intent of wanting to get the very best for that person wholeheartedly. So not just in a hockey sense, as Darren said, you know, do we understand this person, where they're coming from, what their challenges are, where they want to go? You know, do they have hopes, ambitions, beliefs, dreams? You know, and how are you supporting that? How are you helping that? How are you creating a safe space for them to be able to share that? And sometimes that gets overlooked by exactly what Darren said, because we get really obsessed with, wow, they're really, really good technical coach, they're really good at tactics, or they've been really successful, and it's just like, okay, but do they, you know, I always see, if you see a coach, see a player who they've coached maybe years ago, what that meeting is like, if you see that player going, oh, hi, and it's ignited again, I think, wow, that must have been a really special time. Even if it's a season, if it's 5 seasons, if it's 10 seasons, you see it, that connection. When it's like, you know, barely eye contact or just hello, you think, what was that impact like? What trace did that leader leave on that player? And I think it's powerful. But having that position of being a coach is so powerful. And unless we understand that power, we can do real damage.
And it's really interesting because some people will jump all over that coach and they'll be like, oh my God, it's great to see you. Whereas other people will barely have eye contact and walk away. And it's interesting looking at, okay, like Kate said earlier, you can't touch everybody. Hopefully your coaching team can touch everybody. But yeah, it's just understanding like, okay, if I can't touch that person, then how can we make sure that we're still giving them the attention? Because at times we often get attracted to people like people like them or how they would like to be. Mm-hmm. And that means that the people you end up touching are quite similar, and we just have to make sure that we're also finding ways to engage with the other people as well. And it's the only other thing to add.
I think to those obviously coaches on the call, I think what you both have just been speaking about is just reflecting on your past coaches, which is kind of a money can't buy experience. You can go on as many courses as you want, but if you don't reflect on the coaches you've had before you, then I think that's hugely valuable. And I suppose given the amount of time people have got at home, probably encourage people to sit down and almost go through their coaches and I'll take this or I wouldn't take that. I think it could be massively powerful and influential. Going full circle back to where you are now, what would the players say about you? What are your trademarks? What do you stand by that you've taken with you almost everywhere you've gone, almost your DNA? Kate, do you want to kick us off?
I am, as Darren said, this is my bias, I guess. It's my... I'm quite an emotional person and I really care about that connection with players. And so I suppose I think the players would say that is something that I'm focusing on. But as Darren said, understanding in that it's going to be different for every player, and sometimes that's going to be frustrating for me. But just the small moments in that. I was talking yesterday, Helen, my wife's studying organisational psychology, and she loves Brené Brown. Definitely check her out if you've never seen or watched her TED talk. But she talks about a jar for trust, and that every moment, every interaction we have with that person, we're putting a pebble in the trust jar. And you can break that trust in a small way. Maybe a handful of those pebbles will come out of that jar. You can also break trust in one big action or one big moment. That whole jar can be broken. And all the pebbles come out and you have to start again. And it's a slow process. You can't fast track that building of that relationship and that trust and respect for one another. It's in every small moment. And that's what I'm learning, is that it's the eye contact when you turn up to a session to say hello. And just that small moment means I'm with you. I'm connected to you. And there's many moments like that through the session and through the week, through the year. And so it's for me, it's less about, interestingly, so often the hockey, it's more about how am I getting the best out of this player? Do I understand them? Do they understand me? What are their strengths? Do they know their strengths? Do they know what their value is to the team? What their role is? Do they know what they're bringing to the team? How much we need X, Y, and Z from them? And then actually, and I think sometimes frustratingly for the players, then the kind of hockey stuff comes next. But again, it's just about building with them. What do we want to be about? What kind of team do we want to be? What's our culture? What do we want to sound like, feel like, behave like? And how do we put that onto the pitch? And how do we then go and deliver what we want to deliver? What is our vision? What are our values? What are our behaviors? And how are we all feeding into that? And it's just this continually moving animal with myself and Sarah, Hannah, our video analyst, Nathaniel, our physio, and Anna, our manager, just constantly kind of working together to try and get this everybody thriving and going towards this ultimate vision. So I'm loving it. It is challenging, but I love it, and I'm obsessed, as I was as a player. I'm obsessed.
I think that's that one word is possibly one of the things that I hope my players say about me too. I am obsessed and probably too much. Like Kate was saying, as a player, you spend every moment you can messing around with stick and ball. So as a 11-year-old, when I started, I did 8 sessions in 6 days. So Monday, Tuesday, double session on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, double session Saturday. Then at under 14s, when I was 14, I didn't make England 16s. So we added 4 sessions a week before school. So 6 till 7:30, 2 sessions a week were hockey, 2 sessions a week were running. And that obsession went through into when I'm walking down the street, no one around, I'll just suddenly just be walking and then go. And like just these little things, like just everything you can do, like learning Pythagoras theorem in maths class, trying to relate how Pythagoras theorem could help me become a better hockey player. And it's exactly the same through to now when I'm coaching, that whether it's the books that I'm reading or the people that I'm talking to, or the fact that I sit in front of my laptop watching hours of hockey, just trying to figure out what the patterns are that are going to help us become better at what we do. So that obsession is really there. And I guess my big target is that I really want to help create exciting players that are excited to play for us and our exciting style of hockey. And that excitement isn't always that we play Pep Guardiola football. For us, we find our own way of being exciting. So some players are exciting because they have the ability to destroy players individually and go on these massive runs. Some players are exciting because they just love scoring goals. Some players are exciting because they make the world-class save as a goalie. And whenever they make that world-class save, they're already thinking about how they can set that rebound to our defender so we can start a counter-attack. Or it might just be somebody that's really good at man-to-man marking and just stops the opposition from playing.
That's exciting, Darren. I'm excited about that.
To some people. And like Kate was saying earlier, for me, it's about how can we find, one, what is exciting to those individuals, and two, how can we start to create our style of exciting hockey so that people want to turn up, people are excited about being there, people are excited about the way that we play so they fully engage. And that will mean that they fully engage when they're not with us, because me and Kate are coaching at a high level in hockey. And with that, hockey is not a role that you play when you turn up to the pitch. It's a lifestyle. And if players are excited about being part of your team, it will naturally become part of their lifestyle. If they're not excited about being part of your team, they don't feel like they're valued, they don't feel like people care about them, then they won't engage away from the field. They will only engage when somebody's watching over them. And that's where you don't quite get the best out of them. And some teams are all about participation. That's cool. Then I 100% support that as well. It's just not the role that I'm in at the moment. So it's just about understanding who you have in front of you and what you can do to support that environment, I guess.
Both spoken about co-coaches or assistant coaches. I suppose, one, what role have they played when you've been the assistant, or you've been the apprentice coach almost? And what sort of conversations are you having to get the best out of each other? You know, how are you pushing each other to new levels?
I think I thought more specifically about now how I'm coaching with Sarah Kelleher. I think there's a few things that drew us to want to co-coach rather than take on that role singularly. And Sarah is also head coach of the England Under 18 girls program. And she also works as kind of a business consultant. She's got her own business. And I was doing kind of my own work and wanting to coach. And both of us have young families, so it just logistically seemed to work. But then more than that, for me, I played with Sarah at Slough, she's Irish international, and her brain works in a really different way to mine, and I find that that's really good for me. I need to be alongside somebody that does think in a very different way. Our value system, I think, is quite similar, which is good. It helps us align ourselves, but we come at it from a very different perspective. And sometimes, of course, that's unchallenging. It's challenging. Sometimes, you know, we have to have kind of difficult conversations, but that's good. We need to welcome more of those uncomfortable conversations. And then, you know, we because our intent is the same, we know we're getting to, we want the final point is the same. We're able to challenge each other to hopefully get to that final point. And it's about a compromise and a give and take and an ability to see things from a different perspective, which I'm finding really useful and really helpful. And I think, as Darren put so beautifully, that is at her core of who she is getting the best out of people and making it exciting and fun for them. Because if it's not exciting and fun at whatever level you're playing at, you're not going to do it. You're not going to turn up. You're not going to be there. And you're not going to thrive as a person. So I think that sits at the core of her kind of value system. And I'm totally bought into that. So it's great.
And Kate, just quickly there, I think one of the biggest things for me, the biggest takeaway, just talk more. Just have more conversations, one about the players and about the game. I think that's something I've learned, and probably Darren has from football as well, of all the academies. You know, I go into Arsenal Academy, and these coaches just love the players in front of them for whoever, whatever ability and whatever individual. They just love them, and they want to put them in a place where they can go forward. So I can really relate to that. I think that's amazing. Darren?
I'm in a lucky position. Being in Europe, my job is hockey. So I don't have to think about working elsewhere. I wake up in the morning, I come to my desk and I start ripping through video and I start putting up plans about what we're doing. But that was even my life as an assistant coach. So as an assistant, I'm not always the person that creates the big strategy or the big tactical plan. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. But it's really about understanding your place in the coaching team. So I've worked with one coach as an assistant coach who said, okay, I'm really comfortable on defensive stuff. I want you to do everything on ball, which eventually meant that I'm responsible for selecting the starting lineup. I'm responsible because that's the way that we play. I'm responsible for the way we outlet, our high attack, our penalty corner attack, our transitions, like everything on ball, which was great. It was empowering because I get to learn a lot. I get to share my vision of hockey and he gets all of the accountability. So that was really cool. But it was also really good because I realized that my biggest job was challenging him. So we had a team weekend away where it was, I say team, it was me and him. We went away for the weekend. He called me up and was like, okay, Darren, we're going to go away for a couple of days. Bring some swimming shorts and to be at my place at this time. I didn't know where we were going. And we ended up going to some random bed and breakfast out in the middle of nowhere. It was during, I can't remember what football tournament what it was, but we watched a game of football. We had a night out. We had swimming. And then all of the work was done in about 2 hours, where we stood in the middle of this courtyard for bed and breakfast. And we talked about strategy, where we said, okay, I want to press like this. How would you outlet against that? I'm going to outlet like this. How would you press against that? But what if we did this? And literally walking it around in the middle of this grass courtyard. And that challenge was really important. A lot of coaches talk about wanting to be challenged, but then somebody challenges them and they say, they're trouble, or why are they trying to get above their station, or whatever it might be. And the only thing I'd say is, if you really are looking for diversity in your coaching staff, if you really are looking for these different minds, if you are looking for challenge, you have to be open to what that brings, because it won't always be comfortable. But like Kate said, if you're really going towards the same place, that challenge is only done because they think that that is the thing that's going to help you get to where you want to get to. So be open to it. That's what I'd say.
And I'll almost say, if you're never challenged, if you're finding you're never having to answer difficult questions, or you never feel like your defense mechanism is ever going up, I think that's a good question to ask. You know, why is that? I think that's a really good question to ask. Have I created a space that's safe enough for people to feel like they can challenge me? That kind of power imbalance doesn't exist in such a big way between the head coach and the assistant coaches, which, you know, it can, so is a Darren, exactly as Darren said, it can so easily be formed, and it's really often subconscious, but it is there often.
What about the coach that works on their own, that maybe hasn't always got that, you know, co-coach? How do they challenge themselves?
I think part of that is finding people around you that you can, that can challenge, and they don't have to be hockey-minded people. It could just be, listen, I'm going to go and, like, I've got a really good friend and a good mentor who used to work for McKinsey as a management consultant, and I talked to him about all kinds of things, and he's supported me for the last, what, 8-9 years or whatever it's been, where we just have conversations about, I tried this and it didn't work, or I'm having this problem, how do you see it? So that's something that's there, but also lean on your players. If you create a leadership group of your players, and that leadership group should be diverse and try to really touch on all the different stakeholders that you might have in your team, you can lean on them to give you challenge if the whole playing group are not open to challenging you as a coach. So I think there are different ways to do it. You don't always have to have a coaching team, but of course, if you do, then that's incredible. It's a luxury, but it's incredible.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add, I completely agree with all that Darren said. I think also then, just as Darren said right at the top, just, you know, the books that you read, the documentaries that you watch, you know, we're it's brilliant now. We're so much more able to just reach out to those things in a really easy way. And challenge yourself in that way. Read books from people that are out of your comfort zone, that have not grown up in, you know, for me, white, middle class, you know, outside of that. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that sound like? How does that make me feel, think, behave? What are my biases? You know, all of that stuff, just, it's everywhere. And just, it's just diving into it and wholeheartedly and being open to that challenge.
And I think that's really important. So we live now in the world of social media, and because of all of the algorithms that are there in each of these platforms, you only get shown people who are like you. And like I said earlier, people like people like them or how they would like to be. But there's a whole different world that's out there. Everyone was shocked when Trump was elected as president. Everyone was shocked when Brexit was confirmed, because everyone was only seeing the social media that confirmed their point of view. So you have to actively go out there and search for these people that are going to challenge you. Like Kate said, read the books that challenged what you think. Go and listen to music that you really don't like, and then know why you don't like it. Speak to people that you really can't stand and ask them for the advice. Ask them, okay, if you were to describe me as a coach, how would you describe me? I really reach out to people that I know despise me. I know there are people out there that despise me. But I know that they're going to give me the most honest feedback. And they think it's a chance for them just to rip me to pieces. But for me, it's a chance for me to grow. And if you don't reach out to these media and these options that are completely contradicting to what you believe, you will never know why you believe what you believe and whether what you believe is actually the thing that's going to help you get to where you want to get to.
You, I both know you've got books next to you, so a bit of a shout out to, what books are you reading at the moment?
Darren's reading a cracker. Go on.
Yeah, I've got Prisoners of Geography. So I'm only a few pages into it. I picked it up a couple of days ago. It's around the physical and human geography impacts on the situations across the world, geopolitics, the way things are done. But Kate's read it, I haven't, so I'll let her tell you a little bit more about it.
No, it's good. I mean, it's good. I found that challenging, to be honest, because, you know, what we're taught as a white British girl, but what I was taught at school about our, about history and geography, is nothing. What I should have been taught is what was in that book. What is our legacy? What is the British Empire's legacy? What is colonialism? What's the legacy? And I didn't know any of that. And I'm, you know, ashamed to say that, but I'm trying to, you know, it's important that we do the work now. But it's a good book to open my eyes. I'm reading White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, and why it's hard for white people to talk about racism. In a similar way to that book, really, I you know, was absolutely of the kind of a typical white person stance of, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not racist. You know, I have my friends that are black, and I thought, you know, I'm living in this little bubble world thinking that I'm on the right side of things here. And actually I need to do a lot of work because white people are born racist because of the systems and the structures that exist that we buy into. We might not build them ourselves, but we buy into them, and we are privileged because of them. And unless I understand that privilege and what it is like to be on the outside of that, to always be discriminated against, to always have felt oppressed, I think that it's really challenging. I have to pick it up and put it down. I'm finding it's really hard to read, but I need to read it, and I need to do that work because I need to understand better, and I need to be a better human being, frankly. So, yeah.
Beautiful to hear. Thank you, Kate.
Awesome. And guys, I think thank you very much for your time and your energy. I think there's one final question for me to almost bring it full circle. What would a 2020 Kate and Darren say to the first at the coach that was going out at 19, 16 to go and coach? What would the 2020 person say to them and reflect on?
Yeah, probably you're not as good as you think you are. Just go and keep learning. I always thought when I was younger, I was like, okay, yeah, I know this, I'm really good at this. And then I look back, and a lot of my philosophies, a lot of my themes stay consistent, but the detail I was going into and what I thought was important really wasn't important at times. And I missed the human connection at times, and at times I was overly focused on the human connection. And so I think, understand that we still know so little about the game. We still know so little about how we develop people and their journeys. The hockey that you're preparing them for will look completely different by the time they actually get to their time to perform at a top level. So just enjoy the process, keep learning about the people, and you'll do okay.
Yeah, I think for me, it would probably be stay true to myself and my values. I think hockey is equal in terms of gender in lots of ways. It's unequal in lots of other ways. However, I think coaching, I think particularly at the elite level, I think you see a dominance of male coaches versus female coaches. And, you know, we need diversity in every other sense as well. So when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about all diversity. But I think for those people who are in that minority position, I think sometimes it's easy to look to the majority and say, oh, I need to be more like that. I need to behave more like this. And actually, just for me, it would be just staying true to who you are, what my values are. And as Darren said, never stop learning and developing and growing. But I think that knowledge of yourself gives you that confidence to be able to push yourselves into positions that you are going to be uncomfortable with and that are going to challenge you. And I'm still wrangling with that now. You know, I look at job descriptions and say, well, I can't tick every box on that job description for that coaching position. So I bet, you know, I can't go for it. I can't even put my name in the hat. And that's ludicrous because I absolutely know there's lots of, and this is a bit of a broad brush, but there's quite a lot of male coaches who look at that job description and go, well, I can do that, and put their name in the hat, whether they tick the boxes or not. And I think there's lots of things to unpick about that. But I just think for me, it's that confidence to just keep pushing ourselves as long as we stay true to who we are.
Yeah, amazing. And guys, thanks so much for being so honest and so open. I think it's testament to who you are and where you're working at the moment. So very grateful for your time. And have a great rest of your day. And I think coaches on the call again, encourage you to share your reflections and reflect back and what have you taken away to, you know, to this as well. So have a good rest of your day, guys, and amazing to have you on board.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. Lovely to see you again, Darren.
Thanks, Kate.
Take care. Later.
Thank you for listening to the European Hockey Federation podcast, presented the Coaching Lab, powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFIH Academy. More podcasts will follow for series 2 over the next few weeks. Follow European Hockey Federation on social media to keep in touch.